The following is a presentation of Game Show Newsnet and the CLW 83 Network.
Gentlemen, this is Jason Block from WLTI Live and the CLW 83 Network at GameshowNewsNet.com with a WLTI Live extra, and needless to say, this is pretty much the biggest interview of my short interviewing career. The man I have on the phone is the executive producer of both Wheel of Fortune and Jeopardy. He is celebrating 30 years on Wheel of Fortune and is coming to my hometown for 4 weeks of shows, which is going to be broadcast in May. The one and only Mr. Harry Friedman, thank you very much for taking your time out of your busy schedule.
Jason, my pleasure.
All right, thank you so much. Let's get to it. Of course, congratulations on the 30th anniversary and your upcoming return to New York City. What makes New York City so special to Wheel of Fortune?
Well, New York City is just special, period. And it's probably... For us, fan-wise, there's probably no more loyal and no bigger loyal fan base than the one we have in the tri-state area. I mean, it's just, it's energizing to come to New York. It's, it's the Mecca. It's just the greatest city in the world.
Well, we thank you for that. What is this going to be, your third, fourth time?
Let's see. I know Wheel was there once before I joined the show in 88, and I think for me this is probably, God, it could be the fourth time that we brought Wheel there.
Yeah, I know. And this is the first time at Madison Square Garden. You've done it at Radio City a few times.
Actually, we did Madison Square Garden in 99.
Oh, wow. Okay, so it's the second
time.
We
did Wheel and Jeopardy back-to-back. I don't know what the hell I was thinking.
You're the one with all the Emmys. I'm just interviewing you. That's okay. I've read many interviews with you, and you've stated on many occasions that game shows succeed regardless of the economic status of the country. Has the number of applications gone up or down since the most recent economic downturn? And what's on average the number of applications for the very few 650 spots that you have each year?
I've never been able to really correlate the number of applicants to the state of the economy. I know there was a lot of thought around 2008, 2009 that we should somehow do themed weeks around people who are unemployed and might be down on their luck. And we've really never defined our contestant base or any of our procedures based on anything other than, would this person make a good contestant? So the economic factors never once came into play. Anecdotally, though, we did find out a lot more in around that time that people who won on the shows, whether it was Wheel or Jeopardy, but more on Wheel, really really needed the money.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. I mean, speaking of money, you guys give out about $9 to $10 million a year on Wheel. Powers that be are pretty cool with that, right?
Yeah, you know, the prize pool has grown over the years, and for us, it's part of the cost of doing business. If you want to look at it in a strictly fiscal sense, it's exciting for people to win lots and lots and lots of money, and it's cash, cars, trips, and electronics, and other good stuff, and it's all good. I mean, it's what we do.
Yeah, it's great. Now, because I read a little bit up on you, and you seem to be a pretty tech-savvy guy. How important is the online, mobile, technological community to the, you know, how important are they to the continued success of Wheel? I'm talking about Facebook, Twitter, you know, all those online contacts and stuff.
All of the digital extensions are fundamental to our growth. Because if you look at broadcast, broadcast is still the foundation of what we do. But broadcast is not growing. The broadcast audience is not growing. It's at least in terms of the per show or per title audience for most shows. Broadcast is becoming more splintered across a lot of delivery platforms. When you look at a drama series like House of Cards that was released on Netflix and all 13 episodes at one time, how courageous was that? It was fantastic. But that draws viewers away from traditional broadcast television. So we want to be with the viewers and with our audience and with our fans where they are. We want to be with them in their homes on their TV screens, but we also want to be with them in all of the other spaces in which they are active, and that includes social media. So whether it's Facebook or Twitter or Pinterest or anything else that's coming down the pike, we want to be a part of it.
And you, if I remember correctly, reading up, you were one of the first game shows to have an internet platform.
That's right. That's right. And a viewer loyalty program.
The Spin ID. Yeah. Tell us, how did that come about, the Spin ID program?
Well, Wheel Watchers Club really came about as, it was really inspired by the airlines' frequent flyer programs. And I said, if the airlines reward flyers for their business, why shouldn't we reward viewers for their business for watching us? And that was the foundation of it, and then Spin ID was added a couple of years later when we realized, just simply by asking, is this program delivering enough for you? They, meaning the viewers in focus groups, said, you know, we'd like to be able to win prizes too, just like on the show. So that's how Spin ID came about.
And believe me, I believe that's actually one of the most successful aspects of the social media second screen sort of aspect of things. Because you have millions of people who want to win that $5,000 every day.
Yeah, we have, we just passed the 8 million member threshold.
Wow, 8 million.
Mm-hmm.
Unbelievable. To sort of switch gears for a sec, one of the most emotional time periods of the show was, of course, the loss of the announcer, Charlie O'Donnell. Mm-hmm. How were you notified of that? How'd you find out?
Charlie's friendship with our director, Mark Corwin, goes back even further than mine with Charlie. And Charlie's wife, Ellen, called Mark. It was about 8 o'clock in the morning and said that Charlie just didn't wake up. And Mark called me pretty soon thereafter.
Yeah. And that leads into the process of getting to Mr. Jim Thornton, who's the announcer now.
Yep.
How'd that come about, the process of getting to Jim?
We auditioned, dozens of announcers. And I have to say, there are a lot of great voices out there, we wanted someone who was not only a great voice and a worthy successor to Charlie, but also someone whose personality would fit the show. And I had the pleasure and continue to have the pleasure of listening to Jim on the local CBS news radio station, KNX, here in L.A. And I just thought, he sounds like such a decent, nice, down-to-earth guy. And so we invited him into audition, and we met him, and that was it.
And yeah, because it seems to me he, just from my own personal opinion, he has that similar radio/TV background that's sort of a comfortable shoe. I don't mean that in a negative way. It's
right.
A very, very comforting voice.
Right.
Now,
Charlie's voice was, Charlie was a classic. Here was a guy who really grew up with the, you know, from the early days of the big boss jock era.
Right.
And so he was known nationwide and certainly from American Bandstand. So it was a heart-wrenching time to lose such a wonderful and an important member of our family. But we had to move on, and so I'm delighted that we found Jim Thornton.
So I think one of the reasons that the show has succeeded as long as it does is because you always try to keep the show fresh and tweak it in such a way that it feels new and different. How do you gauge what works and what doesn't, and how do you think that you've gotten such a high success rate?
Well, if you look at the fundamental game of Wheel of Fortune, it's exactly the same as it was 40 years ago. You spin the wheel, you call letters, you buy vowels, and you try to solve the puzzle. And the essence of the game has not changed. What we try to do is introduce other elements either of risk or risk and reward, without getting in the way of the game. And I think for the most part, they worked out. People seem to love the mystery round. You know, what are you going to do? It's decision time. So that adds another game element that is unrelated to puzzle solving, but it does help add excitement and drama.
Well, one element that I actually, when I looked at it myself as a viewer from last year, which was last season, the half car wedge, I believe
mm-hmm.
it was two seasons ago,
mm-hmm.
when you did a road trip week, and it was just one of those things that fit so seamlessly, you're realizing, why wasn't this done sooner, per se? You know?
Well, I will let you in on a little secret.
Okay.
The half car concept was actually conceived about 4 years ago.
Okay.
And at a workshop with international producers of Wheel of Fortune, we were discussing different game elements, and some of which they've tried in their productions, and they more often than not are likely to introduce something in ours. And I said, I've always wanted to do maybe a half car wedge where you would get one half and then get the other half, and I wasn't exactly sure how to do it. And the producer of the French version at that time said, I love that idea. Can I try it? I said, yeah, go for it. And so they put it on the air, and they tried it. Theirs was played ultimately differently than ours. Theirs was, they had two wedges that kind of looked like our $1 million wedge, but in place of the million, it said car.
Right.
And so they tried it for a season, and it worked out really well. They said, yeah, we like that. It really adds a lot of excitement. So some of the international versions in two instances now have sort of become the incubator for elements that we've been able to do here domestically, but knowing that the idea originated here made it a lot more palatable.
And now you said, well, another question sort of off the board here. You said international versions. How many international versions we have now?
Right now, I think there are about 14.
Is that amazing that the just a little game of Hangman, technically, created by Merv Griffin is now not only a worldwide icon, but a cultural icon, too?
It's like seeing your furniture in somebody else's living room.
Yeah, exactly. Sure.
It's
thank you.
Just fascinating.
Yeah. Now, let's just say someone hits the $1 million wedge, okay?
Mm-hmm.
And you're about to change the wheel from just basically the normal $100,000 wedge to the $1 million wedge.
Right.
Is it simple as that, or is there a little bit more of a more complicated security process?
No, that's pretty much it. The compliance and practices company, in a secure area, they remove the $100,000 envelope and replace it with $1 million.
There you go. Simple as that. Now,
yeah,
we've only had one winner, Michelle Lowenstein, who I've also interviewed.
Yes.
Since it was introduced. Why do you think that is?
I can't explain it. It was probably improbable that we would have one as early on in the life of the $1 million wedge. But and as far as having another one, all I can tell you is stay tuned.
Oh, really? Okay. Now, what's a typical tape day like for those who are listening and haven't gotten to see a show out in L.A.?
Typical tape day starts around, the booth comes to life at around 6:30 a.m. with some of their pre-builds and just equipment set up. And then the rest of the booth starts filling in about an hour later. The contestants have a 7 a.m. call most of the time. And they go through their briefing and rehearsal for quite an extended period. It's a couple hours altogether. We do audience warm-up. We do a full rehearsal with all the contestants. And then first show is at noon. We do three shows. We break for a meal. We come back around 3 p.m. and do three more shows. And we wrap around 6.
And now let me ask you something. Is the season complete yet, minus these New York tapings, or are these it?
Yes, the New York shows are the last tapings of the season.
Okay. Now, how does the writing staff get the puzzles from the writing room to the TV?
Everything is computerized. Everything is on disk.
No. I mean, like, in other words, how does someone says, okay, I got a great idea for a puzzle.
Well, we have our puzzle producers, Rob Roman, who works with Ken Weiner. But everybody on the staff contributes puzzles, including Pat and Vanna. And then then Rob presents them to our supervising producer, Karen, and they go through them, one pass through, and then that next round comes to me, and I look at them and either make additions or deletions or suggestions, and then it goes to the studio.
Now, do Pat and Vanna actually read up on game shows, like you know, like our site, like Game Show Newsnet or other sites like that?
I think they probably do. You know, after 30 years, it feels like they have a pretty good knowledge of what's going on in the game show world.
Mm-hmm.
And unfortunately, domestically, that world has gotten smaller.
Well, you know what, though? In a way, yes. In a way, no, though. I mean, you do have some, but, you know, I would love to see more. You know, we all would love to see more.
I would as well, very much so.
I got to ask, though. Do you have a Wheel of Fortune slot machine in your living room somewhere?
No. I'll tell you how heavily regulated all of that is. When we tape in Vegas, we have some Wheel of Fortune slot machines on the set, and the Nevada Gaming Commission has to come in and inspect them and verify that they are non-operating machines.
Oh, wow. Okay. Yeah, because they're not connected to any of the computers.
That's right.
Yeah. Now, I got to ask, though, have you ever dropped a 20 off, while you're in Vegas in the machine?
When the slot machines first came out, I went into one of the casinos and I tried it, and it was just great fun, and I got hooked. I was playing for a while. Suddenly, I won $1,000.
No, that's cool.
And then I thought, you know what? What happens now if I win a big jackpot? What if I legitimately suddenly win $1 million on the Wheel of Fortune slot machine? There's going to be a federal investigation.
Wow,
I
that's
got
lovely.
up, I walked away, I have never been near one of the machines again.
Wow, what now? I have to ask, are you involved with, I think it's IGT, who is the
Yes.
company? I assume you're involved with the iterations of those machines as well.
Yeah, we're involved in every aspect of the design of the machines. And not technically, but creatively.
Yeah, exactly. I want to just get a couple of quick Jeopardy questions in, if I may. If that's
Sure.
okay. First of all, most importantly, how is Alex feeling? Because
Alex is feeling good. He's a tough guy. He just doesn't let anything get him down. He's resilient, he's strong, and I think in a lot of ways he's better than ever in terms of hosting.
And of course, now you've had one 30th anniversary celebration this year.
Yes.
You got a 30th anniversary celebration next season
Yes.
for Jeopardy. You broke a little secret with the half car thing. You want to break anything about what's happening with the 30th anniversary Jeopardy?
We're still in the planning stages so far, but I think I feel very safe in saying it's probably going to be one of our most exciting seasons. And we have not yet quite crystallized all of our plans, but we're getting close.
There you go. Do maybe another road trip, perhaps? Who knows?
Yes. Yes.
That could be. You never know. But again, now, the one thing I'll end with this, and then I'll give a final word to you. What do you think a person who wants to be a contestant? Because I want to just go back, because you have the online test for Jeopardy, I'm assuming, has gotten a lot of people who wouldn't necessarily come out to LA doing these testing things. And I
Yeah.
think it's fantastic, by the way. You get a whole different sort of contestant pool that way. Do you ever see that coming to Wheel of Fortune, perhaps?
I don't, only because I think the general feeling is that for most people is that Wheel of Fortune is more accessible. And so that's why the two shows are as different in their approach to finding and selecting contestants as they are in format. For us, the Wheelmobile really, really is a great way to find contestants for Wheel of Fortune. It becomes a big party. Sometimes we get 4, 5, 6 thousand people coming out, and it feels like there's not a lot of preparation necessary to come out and play Wheel of Fortune. Jeopardy is another, is a different animal. And the online testing has been a tremendous boon to us. We've now tested over 1 million people online.
Wow. Well, Ms. Friedman, I just would like to say thank you again for your time on this. Of course, the tapings are going to be March, I think, 16th to the 19th here in New
Right.
York.
Right.
I will be. I will
15th,
be.
15th, 16th, 18th, and 19th.
19th, and I will be there. I believe the ticket requests are over, but I think it's on 7online.com if you haven't done so already. Do you have any last words for all the people who are listening here?
Well, it's not easy. In fact, it's downright mystifying to me that any TV show could possibly continue to thrive after 30 seasons, and that doesn't happen without the support of a wide, broad, deep fan base that is as loyal as they are active, and we're so grateful to be able to celebrate this milestone. We couldn't do it without the viewers.
Again, this is thank you very much. This has been an exclusive interview with the executive producer of Wheel of Fortune and Jeopardy, Mr. Harry Freeman. Again, thank you for taking time out of your very busy schedule, and we'll see you in New York. Thank you so much.
My pleasure, Jason. Thank you.
Thank you. You have a nice day. Thank you.
You too.
Bye-bye. Bye-bye.
If you have any questions or comments about WLTI Live, please submit it to clw3network@gmail.com. This has been a presentation of both Game Show NewsNet and the CLW83 Network. Tune in!